That energy.
Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:33 p.m. on Tuesday, February 18th, 2025. And present today, we've got Representative Allard, Representative Hannon, Representative Johnson, Representative Bynum, Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Jimmy, Representative Galvin, Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Representative Shiragi, Representative Stapp, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. Just a reminder, if folks can mute their cell phones. This afternoon, since House Bill 69, known as the BSA bill, is not in our possession, we will hear House Bill 78. That's the defined benefit bill. And so first we'll hear invited testimony from Chief Shiragi with the Anchorage Fire Department, and then we've also got Nolan Clauda with the Anchorage Municipality, as well as Tyler Bond with the Institute of Retirement and Security. So if there are no questions, we'll jump right into it. First online, we have Chief Douglas Shiragi, the Anchorage Fire Department. Chief Shiragi, if you are there, if you can put yourself on the record and proceed.
Yes. Good afternoon. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. This is Doug Shiragi. I'm the fire chief for the Anchorage Fire Department. Thank you for hearing this bill, and to Majority Leader Cobb, thank you for bringing the bill forward and for the opportunity to go on the record in support of House Bill 78. As mentioned, I'm the fire chief here in Anchorage. I am also the past president and a life member of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. And I'm speaking today in support of dedicated firefighters throughout Alaska, though the bulk of my experience is from the Anchorage Fire Department, and I'm best equipped to speak from my experience here. The main point of my testimony today is that the lack of a defined benefit pension is a recruiting and retention problem which is costing Alaska taxpayers. Here in Anchorage, our recruiting numbers are not what they once were. But our biggest challenge is retention of our employees once our Tier 4 benefits become portable, after which some of these firefighters are leaving for cities in other states, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, that have a pension system. Here in Anchorage, we spend millions of dollars annually to recruit and train our new firefighters. And then they spend the first few years out of the academy accruing valuable experience in service to their community and achieving their journeyman status. Now, traditionally, we would have benefited from their experience and their training and recovered the cost of their initial training over the balance of their careers. But when we lose them shortly, when they have about 5 to 7 years on the job, when we lose them after having provided all this training, we lose the ability to realize the benefit and the expense of all that training. These journeyman firefighters are being heavily recruited in the Pacific Northwest by fire departments there, in some cases offering very large signing bonuses. In one example, I saw a $50,000 signing bonus for paramedics. They're also offering lateral transfers, which means that our firefighters, with all of their training and experience and their journeyman status, can move to a different fire department and attend an abbreviated training academy and go right onto the job with some of the accrued status that they already have. One department in particular uses one of our former employees, a person that we would call a rising star, and his family in a recruiting video specifically targeting Anchorage Fire Department employees. Our firefighters overwhelmingly identified the lack of a defined benefit pension as the single most important factor in the decision to relocate. For this reason, here in Anchorage, we've entirely stopped recruiting out of state. We simply can't compete. The employees that would apply from out of state are more likely to return to their home state once their benefits become portable. And in fact, many of them don't accept the job if they get offered one. We are competing for the same finite pool of paramedics with fire departments all over the West and all over the United States. What we have done is we've resorted to paying our incumbent firefighters to attend paramedic school. We offer a full ride tuition benefit, including wages and backfill and expenses. It costs us about $100,000 per paramedic to come back with paramedic licensure, and it takes about a year off the job. And it really stings when one of these employees that we have put through paramedic school, and they put in their 5 years, and they then turn around and accept a job in Tacoma. The majority of the Anchorage firefighters are now Tier 4 employees. In the next 1.5 years, the very last of our Tier 3 firefighters will become eligible to retire. And in the absence of deliberate action, as our Tier 3 employees retire, turnover will accelerate, and the relative cost of the new hire training will continue to increase over the long term. So I am grateful for your efforts to stem the tide of out-migration of Alaska's firefighters, and I offer my full support. And I can take any questions if there are any. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Chief Schrage. Do we have a question, Representative Hannon?
No, I was just going to thank Chief Schrage for the newest grandbaby that we have added to the growing demographic in Alaska.
So I second that.
Thank you, Member Bradford.
Okay, seeing no further questions, thank you very much, Chief Schrage. Next, we're going to go to in the room. We've got Nolan Clauda, Policy Director of the La France Administration for the Anchorage Municipality. If you could put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Nolan Clauda. I'm the Policy Director at the Municipality of Anchorage, and I work in the Mayor's Office for Mayor Suzanne LaFrance. Mayor LaFrance isn't able to speak with the committee today, but did wish me to convey her very strong support for HB 78. This is a very important measure, and also to thank Representative Kopp and to thank this committee for their work in addressing the issue of pensions and pension reform. Like local governments all over the state, the municipality of Anchorage is dealing with significant labor shortages that impact our ability to deliver services, the core services that the public expects. So we've implemented a number of policies to improve retention, but we will continue to lose employees without a competitive pension system in place. The mayor took office on July 1st with very high vacancy rates throughout the municipality of Anchorage. We had an overall vacancy rate through 2023 and into 2024 that was about 16% of positions. In some departments, it was higher than that, including within our police department. And I believe the committee heard from our police chief, Sean Case, last week testifying about and support of this bill, as well as a fire chief that you heard from earlier, Chief Schrage. But we had 20% in vacancy with the police department. The main maintenance and operations department in the municipality of Anchorage, which is who handles road maintenance and snow removal, was a very similar level, about 18%. The health department, where public health nurses, very high at 30%. The municipal prosecutor, and this has been something that's been in the media, we had a 35% vacancy in 2024. And we've worked hard on implementing improvements that we can, to address these things. And we've seen improvement in a lot of these numbers. But, the turnover had been very high. Turnover in the municipal attorney's office was at one time approaching 60%, actually, in the last few years. So these all impact our ability to provide basic services. We talk about attorneys who prosecute misdemeanor theft. We talk about our public health nurses. We talk about our heavy equipment operators who plow our snow, police who patrol our streets. All of these things impacted by turnover and retention problems. And so it's particularly concerning, when we talk about public safety. We were around 60 sworn officers down, this past summer. So this is a big issue when it comes to our ability to address public safety issues in a very basic way. So pension reform, we view it as a public safety issue, as well as our ability, as well as all kinds of critical services. But it is above all a public safety concern. We've looked into the issue of retirement and what kind of a role retirements play in retention, and one bit of analysis that we had done looked at through our HR department looked at employees that had a defined contribution system retirement versus a defined benefit, and how long they stayed with the municipality. If we were able to say that they started at about the same time for a given date, how long would they stay with us? And we found that folks that had a defined benefit pension would stay with us for around 9 years, and those that had defined contribution would stay with us for about 5 years. And so a very, very significant difference in how long people stay employed with us. And so this is something where we have a lot of ability to implement certain kinds of retention improvement measures, but pensions is one area where we feel that state policy is something that's very needed. So all of this to say that local governments like the municipality of Anchorage depend on a strong workforce to deliver critical services, from road maintenance, keeping streets safe and trails safe. We continue to struggle to recruit and retain a strong workforce and provide the services that communities need if we do not solve this problem. So if we care about safe streets, clean parks, reliable services, and infrastructure, then we do need to care about pension reform as well. And I am happy to take any questions the committee may have as well.
Great. Thank you. I've got two questions. Representative Allard, Representative Bynum. Representative Allard.
Thank you. And through the chair, thanks for being here today. So the homeless situation in Anchorage is an all-time high. The school district is ranked the last in the country. You have crime and murders that are per capita at an alarming rate. And the housing affordability is a crisis in Anchorage. And you're telling me that defined benefits is what's not keeping people in the state of Alaska?
Through the chair to Representative Allard. Good points. So we have a number of issues that affect the ability to recruit and retain folks and that are not just specific to the municipal government but to employers that we talk to in general. All of those issues that you're speaking to, homelessness, schools, we don't have an ability to we don't have control over the school district, of course. Housing, huge, huge issues for the LaFrance administration and things that we're working on very hard, and I'm happy to share more details about that. But we don't claim that pensions are the sole answer to all of our problems, but we do think it's a very critical linkage. And when we look at the number of key employees that we often lose to other states that offer more competitive pension systems, we do see that as a major factor.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up.
So
the Anchorage Assembly votes on the school district's budget, and we do have control over that because you're also looking at the crime rate, you're looking at the affordability with housing, and the homeless. So we do impact that. As a representative from Eagle River and a member of former member of the Assembly, I will tell you those are major reasons. So it's going to be a hard sell to say defined benefit outweighs the DC defined contributions. Thank you.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and through the chair. So I really like when we talk about data and data points. Where we get those data points really matters when we're talking about them. So you'd mentioned the fact of a DB employee will stay for 9 years, and then you said a DC employee will stay for 5 on average. Are you talking about a data point that is the same data point? Meaning, if we're talking about DB employees, there's nobody hiring in the state of Alaska new DB employees. Everybody is DC. So you've got to go back quite a few years to find new hires for DB, and or you're going to be talking about an employee that is further along in their career than somebody that is potentially going into DC. So when you talk about that data set, are you talking about data that aligns, or are we talking about data that is over different years? Can you describe that a little bit for me?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, that I can get more information on the exact analysis that was done by our HR department. But what they were looking at, in essence, is that you do have employees who might have been elsewhere who could have been defined benefit from Tier 1 or Tier 2 or earlier in their careers that then start at the municipality of Anchorage. And so we have some ability to look at when people started that may not have been that they started back when those pensions were active. So I could get more information on it, though. But that was the analysis that was done.
Follow up?
And if it's possible, could we just provide that information? It'd be helpful to see exactly what you're talking about when you say those numbers, and it'd be helpful. And then I have a follow-up question, if that's all right, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you. So when you talked about employees leaving, you said leaving for more competitive pensions. Did you do an evaluation based on total compensation within your municipality, comparing that to where employees actually went? So are we actually talking about the pension was the reason they left, or are we talking about a total compensation issue? I know compensation goes a long way when we talk about recruitment of employees. So I'm just curious to know, like when you mention that data point, was a holistic evaluation done on the all the factors?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, I can get more information about what we've done. We have done some extensive surveying of our existing workforce, and pension came to the top of the list of things that they were concerned with. And we also do have, and I think we heard from Chief Shragi earlier, about some very targeted recruitment efforts from out-of-state employers getting, for example, you know, recruiting firefighters and using the pension as a major carrot for doing that. So we do have a lot of reasons to believe it is a very key factor when it comes to retention of employees, but I could get more information about how we were able to determine some of those things, including some of our employee survey results, if that would be helpful.
Thank you. I'll follow up with additional information outside of here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Stepp, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Foster through the chair. Appreciate you coming and expressing the MOA's viewpoint regarding what you guys feel about defined benefits return to that. My question to you is, what's the municipality's position on the 22% contribution for PERS through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp, I will have to. That's another issue where I would have to get some more input on it. I don't have an answer for you off the top of my head about the contribution amount.
Fault, Mr. Coach. Mainly because usually when we hear from municipalities, most of them, at least in my experience, they want to return to defined benefit, but that comes with a caveat, which is, but we don't want to pay anymore, or we don't want to take any more risk in a plan if you guys do that. So someone else has to share the risk. So my question is going to be, does anything currently prevent the municipality of Anchorage from creating their own retirement system benefit outside of the state through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp, my understanding is that it's theoretically possible that we could do something like that. But with any kind of a pension that we would set up, it's always better, you know, to have a larger pool. And so it benefits from having that larger pool of workers for the allocation of costs and payouts. So that's the best that I'm aware of. But so yes, that's the answer I can offer.
Representative Stapp.
Yep. Thank you, Chair Foster. Last one through the chair. So some of our units in Fairbanks employees aren't enrolled in SBS, and I'm curious if all of the different groups in the MOA, are all of you participating in SBS, or did some opt out of the supplemental benefits system through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I do believe, so the supplemental benefit system, I believe that most MOA employees are in it. I don't know if there are some caveats where some are not and some are paying into Social Security instead. I don't know the exact answer there. It's something I could track down.
Okay, any further questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Clouda.
Okay, next we'll go to Mr. Tyler Bond. And let's see here. Looks like I believe Tyler's in the room. All right. If you can put yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. My name is Tyler Bond. I'm the research director for the National Institute on Retirement Security. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization based in Washington, D.C. I'm here today not to speak for or against House Bill 78, but to share the findings from our research on public pension plans in states across the U.S. We do research on a wide variety of topics relating to retirement, but the majority of our research does focus on issues affecting public pension plans. So where I'd like to begin is a bit of a national comparison. So this is from a report that we released a couple of years ago that was specifically focused on Alaska and on evaluating the recruitment and retention specifically of teachers and other education professionals in Alaska and offering our analysis of what options could be for retirement plan design pertaining to teachers and other education professionals in Alaska. So what this state does, or what this chart does, is it separates between states in which all or most teachers and education professionals participate in Social Security versus, on the bottom half of the chart, states where only some or maybe few or no teachers participate in Social Security. And then looking at what other types of retirement plans are offered. And at the top of both halves of the chart are states that offer a defined benefit pension. And as you can see, both for states that have their teachers participating in Social Security, as well as those that do not, the majority offer a defined benefit pension. Below that, there are some variations in plan design, such as hybrid plans or cash balance plans, or states in which teachers have a choice between what type of plan they wish to participate in. But you'll see at the very on the very bottom row, defined contribution only, the only state that's listed there is Alaska. Alaska is the only state that for its teachers and other education professionals only offers a defined contribution plan. If this state, if this chart also included other categories of public employees, there are a couple of other states in which predominantly state employees are only offered a defined contribution plan, but Alaska, again, in that regard, remains an outlier in only offering a defined contribution plan.
Okay, thank you. We've got three questions. We've got Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Bond, my question is, if I am a 30-year-old police officer or firefighter, and I am looking for a job, looking for where I want to go in this state, in this United States, and I, of course, this retirement would be one of my things in my mind as a 30-year-old potentially, but there's also wages and other things. But if I, how easy is it as a 30-year-old online to get this kind of information is my question, if I'm trying to shop around.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Galvin. I think as the previous two speakers in this hearing attested to, it is relatively easy for public employees, especially in highly sought-after professions like paramedics, firefighters, state troopers, to get information about where they can earn a pension in another state or in certain states within neighboring jurisdictions.
Follow-up. So
it
so this is just very public. Everybody knows that Alaska is landing on the bottom here. I just want to make sure that that's, if this is not news to any to anyone at that age who's looking. It's so easy to find.
Through the chair, to the representative, I don't want to overstate this. I think if you were a firefighter in Alaska, you were 30, you were debating where the rest of your career could take you, if you were interested in what other options were out there and you were dedicated to looking on the internet, you could find this information. Is it common knowledge? I would say probably not, but it is accessible knowledge.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we've got Representative Stapp, and then Hannon, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair to Mr. Bond. So I know it's common tongue to you and probably some of the folks on this committee, but could you actually explain to the committee and the public what those different things mean? What's a cash balance plan? What's a hybrid plan? Just so folks are clear on what we're actually looking at here, if you could, through the chair. Thank you.
Yes, through the chair. Yes, Representative Stapp. So the top of half of the chart is the traditional defined benefit pension plan. The second row, which says DB plus DC component, is what people typically refer to as a hybrid plan. So there is still a defined benefit component. It is likely a smaller component than a system that is full DB. And there's often a mandatory defined contribution plan that's layered on top of the lesser defined benefit component. The choice, there's actually sort of three different choice options presented here. So there are states in which a worker can choose between a full defined benefit plan or a hybrid plan. Washington State is one of those. There are a few states where there the DB plan is the default, but teachers can opt into a DC plan if they want to make that affirmative choice. There are a few states where the choice is between the hybrid plan or a defined contribution only plan. And then a cash balance plan is a bit of a mix between a DB and a DC. What you are accumulating in a cash balance plan is interest credits, and when you interest and earnings credits. And when you reach the end of your career and you choose to retire from the cash balance plan, those credits are converted and then turned into an annuity stream in retirement. And the plan provisions lay out how the interest and earnings credits are calculated.
Follow up?
Yeah, quick follow-up, Mr. Kocher. And can you maybe just explain to us, typically when you see, let's say, a DB plus DC hybrid plan, what's just give me a difference to understand it. So for me, generally they have lower percents of salaries built in the DB plan. That's how I understand them. So if you could just elaborate what the actual material difference is between a DB and a DB hybrid in a practical sense, if you could, through the chair.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Stapp. So in typically what you would see is the percentage amount that's contributed to the DB component is a lower percentage amount. So if in a full DB plan you might be contributing 8%, in a hybrid you might only be contributing 4% to the DB component, and then maybe a mandatory 3% on top of that into the defined contribution plan. Typically as well, because the contribution into the defined benefit component is lower, the benefit formula for calculating the benefit is probably also based on a smaller benefit multiplier than in the full defined benefit plan. So the participant in a hybrid would still be earning some amount of guaranteed monthly income through the DB component, but they would be expected to make up some of the difference with what they save and invest through the defined contribution component of the hybrid plan.
Follow?
And one last follow-up. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. And my understanding is the reason states do that, basically it boils down to controlling for risk. Is that a fair assessment, through the chair?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Stapp, I would say that is a fair assessment.
Thank you.
Okay, next question. We've got Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Mr. Bond, I wanted to just clarify that on this chart, the two columns on the right, so we've got teachers and ESPs. I was a career teacher, so I know that's education support professionals. And then we have HEF and HEFSP, higher education faculty and higher education support professionals. Do you have the same analysis for our other public sector employees?
So through the chair to Representative Hannon, no, we do not have this chart produced for other categories of public employees. We produced this chart specifically for the report that we did looking at teacher recruitment and retention here in Alaska. So we only focused on the plans for teachers and other education professionals. You could create a similar chart for other categories. I would say for other categories of public employees, especially once you're talking about public safety, I'm not sure that was true. I was going to say that you might see more variation. I mean, the difference you would see there is a lot more public safety plans are sponsored at the municipal level rather than at the state level. But fundamentally, these structures wouldn't look significantly different.
Thank you.
Okay. We've got Representative Bynum, then Representative Ballard.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and through the chair. So there was reference in this chart. This chart is not ranking. So meaning that Alaska is showing as DC only at the bottom is not because this is ranking them at the bottom, but this is just where it falls on the chart. Is that accurate?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, yes, that is accurate.
Then I have a quick follow-up. Has there been an evaluation done on the option to opt out of any other options? So, for example, in Alaska, when we talk about teachers specifically, there has been an option, and I believe there still is an option in law, that they can opt into participation in Social Security. Has there been any evaluation or study done on the impacts of that when we talk about overall retirement and why those decisions would or would not be made?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum. So just to clarify your question, are you asking specifically about opting in or out of Social Security, or are you asking about the plans in which there is a choice component for the defined benefit pension?
Well, let me ask the question differently so I understand. So when we talk about other options for retirement, are the when we look at DB and DC, are all of these other states, are they providing an option for participation into something like SBS and Social Security on top of these things, or are you only evaluating DBDC?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, thank you for clarifying the question. So in the top half of this chart, the states listed there, regardless of the plan option, most or all of their teachers do participate in Social Security. The bottom half of the table, the states listed there, regardless of the retirement plan option, only some or maybe no teachers participate in Social Security. Typically that, and I will say that except for the states in which it's specifically mentioned that there is a choice, in the other states there is no choice as to whether or not employee participates in the pension plan, and if it's a state that has Social Security participation, there is no choice as to whether or not they participate in Social Security.
And then as a quick follow-up, so
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, through the chair. So that leads back to the question, has there been an evaluation or impact of specifically that choice not to be in that top category, or is this just pure data that we're providing at this point saying that for Alaska that they are not participants in the Social Security program?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum. So this chart should not be interpreted in any way as any kind of ranking. We're simply grouping states into different categories. This chart is not meant to convey that just because the defined benefit is the top row that it is suggested to be superior or inferior to any of the other states. I will say NERS, before I started working there, did at least one report where we looked at a couple of the states that had, by that point, adopted choice options where workers had a choice as to which type of plan they participated in. And I would be happy to follow up with you and share that research. I will say that one of the things we have seen that greatly impacts the outcome of the choice is what the default option is set as. That is whether the default option is the defined benefit plan or something else. That seems to have a significant impact on the choice that workers make.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, I've got Representative Allard and then Representative Hannon.
Thank you for being here today. Through the chair. So with the defined benefits plan, when the member dies, I hate to say it that way, but that's what happens. What happens to their defined benefits?
Through the chair to Representative Allard. So typically most plans will allow for an option for there to be a survivor benefit. So if the member elects to have a survivor option as part of their pension, then at least some portion of their pension would go to their surviving spouse when they are deceased. If they do not elect a survivor option, then when they pass away, their benefit ends.
Thank you. May I do a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. So in the state of Alaska, have you studied a little bit of those that are in the defined benefits plan currently?
Through the chair, yes.
May I?
Follow-up.
What happens to the Alaskans' defined benefit? Is it labeled that way too? Meaning that they could either leave it to a family member or whoever their next of kin is, or is it done?
through the chair to Representative Allard. I don't have that specific information right now. I would need to look that up and follow up.
I think I do.
Representative Allard?
One more thing. Okay. And then with defined contribution in the state of Alaska, if a member passes away, that can go on to their next of kin, and it can go on to their children until the funds are depleted. Did you know that?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, yes. Okay. So the defined contribution plan is considered individual savings, and so the participant can pass it on to their spouse, their children, to whomever they designate in their defined contribution plan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, especially for letting me have a second crack at it. Representative Byman's question provoked me to wonder, do you know how many other states do not have a Social Security benefit for their teachers?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon. Yes, so as you can see here in the bottom half of this table, there's a number of states, including California, Louisiana, Maine, Texas, where very few or any teachers participate in Social Security.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Allard, and then Representative Bynum. Representative Allard.
Thank you. I just wanted to do just a quick follow-up. So with the state of Alaska, with defined benefits, the portion of those defined benefits would go to the spouse, but after the spouse passes, it doesn't go to anybody else in their family. So I just wanted to clarify that and put that on the record.
Through the chair to Representative Allard, yes. I don't know of any instances in which the benefit would pass from a member to a spouse and then on to a child.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And through the chair, so when we look at these plans where there's these choices and you see that the employee has an option to pick one or the other, when we look at it from a cost perspective for the employer, does each plan, whether an employee chooses to go into some kind of a hybrid or a defined benefit or a defined contribution, does the cost to the employer stay the same?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, I don't have that information right now. I would need to look at that to see what the specific details of the plans that are available in these different states offer.
Thank you.
Okay, I think that's the entirety of the questions on this slide. So if we want to move on to the next slide, three.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So we analyzed some of the data for Alaska and the experience with the closure of the defined benefit plans and the implementation of the defined contribution plans. So we looked at the change in worker count by tenure from 2005, when the defined benefit plans were still open, to 2021, which was the most recent year of available data at the time we did the analysis. And what we saw and what this chart shows is that the number of workers with fewer years of tenure, meaning newer employees, those numbers are down very significantly for TRS, less so, but still down for PERS, which suggests that there is less retention in 2021 than there was in 2005, which would suggest that the defined contribution plan is not as effective at retaining employees as the defined benefit plan is. And the number of employees with more than 14 years of experience has increased in that period of time, which again suggests to me that the workers who are still participating in the defined benefit plans are staying in those jobs so they can continue to earn their pension benefit. But younger workers, or I should say workers with less experience who joined after the switch to the DCR plans, they are not staying for as long as more experienced workers.
Okay. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. Yes, thank you for this. Can you tell me what was the average rate in the lower 48 and the rest of the country in 2005 that you compared this to?
Through the chair, to the representative, I don't have that number. This is not comparing Alaska to the lower 48. This is a comparison within Alaska. So this is looking at what the tenure count was in 2005 within Alaska and comparing it to what the tenure count was in 2021 within Alaska. So all of this data here is exclusive to Alaska and does not include data from the lower 48.
Follow up.
Wouldn't you think it would be pertinent to include information across the country to see where other states are faring, if they were in the same boat in 2005 as they are today? Wouldn't you think a good comparison would be reasonable when we look at data like this?
Through the chair to the representative. Yes, we certainly could look at data like that. That was not what we were tasked to do in this report. So we were only looking at Alaska data for this report.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So you had indicated that you made basically an if-then statement or a conclusion based on data provided, and that is that you look specifically at this 2005 factor, and then you went to 2001, and you said, therefore. And when you asked that, or when you said that, did you evaluate all of the other major factors when we talk about retention and employment to make that conclusion? Or are you only looking at this one data set, and then making a conclusion from this data set?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum. So we were only tasked with looking at the retirement plan options, and so our focus was on that. We did not include in our analysis other factors that may have weighed on worker count and the changes in worker count from this time. So, again, this indicates to me that the absence of the defined benefit plan in 2021 was contributing to the lower count of workers with fewer years of tenure. But there are likely to be other factors that contributed as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, on the topic of a circumstance, Mr. Bond, where someone failed to check the survivorship box, and so their spouse received no benefit. They predeceased their spouse. Do you know whether or not that is subject to Alaska law only under our Trust and Estates Code, which happens to be, we call it Title 13? In other words, would Alaska and those people in the building have the power to make that change such that the failure to check a box would still pass the benefit through an intestate settlement of the estate to a spouse? Do we have that power if we needed to make that reform, or is that an IRS matter or some other federal jurisdiction? Does that make sense?
Through the chair to Co-Chair Josephson, I do not have that information. That is a more specific legal question that I have not looked at.
Okay.
Follow up.
But since I don't know any trust or estates lawyer in the room at present, you don't know the answer to what happens to that benefit in the absence of the checkbox. What happens to the benefit, whether it simply dies, so to speak, or passes to the estate in any regard? You don't know that.
Through the chair to Representative Joseph, no, I do not have that information.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. We've got questions, Representative Allard, Representative Bynum, Representative Allard.
Thank you. The answer to that is that the state retains those funds. I was going to ask if we can go. I feel bad we're only on slide two, but I got to go back to slide one. On the bottom of slide one, Mr. Bond, it says DC only for the state of Alaska. I would I would say that's incorrect because we have a very generous SBS program, and I was just wondering how come you didn't include that in that slide?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, we mention SBS briefly in our report, but that was not a focus of what we were analyzing in that research.
So you weren't asked to put that on this slide, therefore it was left off?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, yes, we did not include that in this chart.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Bynum, then Representative Hannon. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and through the chair. When you go back to that slide, to slide three, you were just showing some data. You're basically trying to do a comparison of 2005 to 2021, and you put a TERS category in a PERS category. Can you explain again what you're actually trying to demonstrate with just, for example, with just TERS here?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, yes. So we looked at, in 2005, in TERS, what were the number of workers in TERS with less than 5 years of experience? What was the number of workers in TERS with between 5 and 14 years of experience? And what were the number of workers in TERS with more than 14 years of experience? So we looked at those three specific numbers. And then we looked in 2021, what were those three specific numbers for less than 5 years, between 5 and 14 years, and more than 14 years in TERS at that time in 2021. And then this chart is simply showing the difference between those two numbers. So it shows that the number of workers in TERS who had less than 5 years of experience was 11% lower in 2021 than it was in 2005.
Okay. As a quick follow-up.
Follow-up?
From a data set evaluation, did you evaluate around the point at which employees were going from DB and into DC and then basically follow that cohort through their tenure, right? So, you know, if I was hired after the cutoff, I would be in DC, and obviously the year before you'd have employees in DB. Did you actually evaluate that data set, or are we looking at two different types of employees in different, you know, phases of life? And you understand what I'm asking?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum. Yes. So what we're looking at is the total number of participants in TRS. In 2005, that would have only been people participating in the defined benefit plan, since that was the only option offered in 2005. In 2021, it would have been a mix of participants in DCR and the DB component, because the total TRS workforce in 2021 would have included employees participating in both plans. So we chose these 2 years because 2005 was the last full year in which the defined benefit plan was offered the entire year, and 2021 was the most recent year of available data at the time when we did this analysis.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I want to go back to chart on page 2 that Representative Allard just asked you about. And I think I'm throwing you a lifeline because I think perhaps you didn't understand her question. I believe that you did not include SBS in this evaluation of teachers and university employees because they were not eligible for SBS. Would that be accurate, as opposed to you left that data out?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, yes, we were specifically looking at teachers and other education employees in Alaska. When we do mention PERS in passing in the report, we do acknowledge that some PERS employees do participate in Social Security and other PERS employees do participate in the SBS program, but we did not focus on SBS because we were specifically looking at teachers and education employees.
Follow up.
Who are not eligible for SBS, right?
Okay, we got a question, Representative Allard.
Thank you. And not to go tit for tat here or anything, but the teachers were eligible, but they opted out of SBS. So at one point they were eligible and they decided not to. Just to put it on the record. Thank you.
No, that was Social Security.
We'll come next in the queue, and we can come back if anybody else wants to make any more comments. Representative Josephson.
To further clear the record, there was some debate about what happens in the event of a failure to elect survivorship benefits. And the comment was made, it reverts to the state. The trust itself is not the state, is it? It's the trust.
Through the chair to Representative Josephson. Yes, so the defined benefit plan, the contributions of the participants in the plan are pooled and are held in a trust for the benefit of the members.
Right. And so to repeat, the trust is not the state. The state is a different entity than the trust. Is that fair?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, yes, I believe that is a fair statement.
All right, follow up.
Follow up.
And so when a spouse, a public employee spouse, elects a survivorship benefit, they are affirmatively saying, since this whole pooling is sort of a team sport, we're in this together, they're saying, I will take a haircut on what would otherwise be a more generous benefit, maybe hopefully out of love for a spouse, perhaps younger, perhaps in better health, who will outlive me. And this is actuarially determined so that the spouse will in turn receive not the full benefit, but some diminished benefit throughout their life as well. Isn't that the election that's made?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, yes, that is accurate. Typically, when a member elects to have a survivor option as part of their benefit, the benefit that the member receives is reduced in order to provide an actuarially fair benefit to their spouse if their spouse survives them.
Follow up. And so one might assume, hopefully, that there's no heavy-handedness in the selection or failure to select, but an economic decision made by spouses about their other assets and whether survivorship, about the health of the retiring employee, about other assets that might protect a surviving spouse. There are lots of variables that go into the decision whether or not to elect a survivorship. But it might be plausible to say, given those other protections, there's no value in the survivorship, and I'll keep my benefit whole. Is that the way someone might look at this?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson. Yes, I mean, it's obviously a very individual decision that the member and their spouse, if they have a spouse, would make for themselves, knowing their own situation and what would be the best potential option for their given situation.
Follow up. What do you make of the, I guess, criticism that whereas in the DB plan you can cover effectively two people, an employer, retired spouse, or spouse, and a presumably non-employee spouse, although they could both be public employees, of course, and elect the survivorship. But there's no next generation that's covered. Do you know enough about the value of DB versus DC to reach a conclusion about whether its value remains greater than defined contribution, notwithstanding the inability to pass it on to children?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson. So when we have looked at comparisons between defined benefit plans and defined contribution plans, we do find that defined benefit plans are more economically efficient than defined contribution plans. Generally, what our analysis has found is that for a given level of retirement benefits, that level of retirement benefits can be provided at half the cost through a defined benefit plan than through a defined contribution plan because of pooling of contributions, pooling of risk, longevity risk being one of those, investment risk being another. Typically, professionally managed defined benefit plans can earn higher investment returns with lower fees than individually directed defined contribution plans can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I don't see any further questions. Representative Allard?
I just need a little bit of clarity, and I'm through the chair, and thank you, Representative Josephson, for pointing this couple of things out. So if a spouse and a husband, let's just say the wife has defined benefits and they both get killed in a car accident, what happens to those? Trust me, equal state. But what happens to those DB benefits? Where does it go, or defined benefits? Back in the trust?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, yes, I believe that that would stay in the trust.
Follow up. So then if you have DC and the spouse and the husband both are the wife and the husband both die in a car accident, what happens to those defined contributions?
Through the chair to Representative Allard,
if there are children,
beneficiaries designated, mm-hmm. The funds would go to the beneficiaries.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. I don't see any further questions on this slide. Representative Galvin?
I think thank you very much, through the chair, and I'm sure you're not an attorney, certainly probably not an estate planning attorney, but my understanding is that when we talk about benefits and beneficiaries and all of that, and perhaps we need to bring in someone else to really get into some of this clarity, but my understanding is that when someone passes, if there's been no designation, any benefit goes to an estate. And then there becomes more clarity through our system, wherein we then find out where any sort of benefits go to. So unless there's some very specific line item in some kind of a contract, my understanding is this is pretty clear when it comes to estate planning. And so I just want to make sure that the room is aware that we don't have an estate planner here that I know of testifying, nor is there one on this particular committee, and that we should be careful to not dig too much into estate planning, Chair, in my opinion, and unless it becomes something where we have someone in the room to help us. Thank you.
And just so folks know, we do have online Kathy Lee, Director of the Division of Retirement and Benefits, so just so folks know. Do we have any further questions? Seeing none, we'll go over to slide 4.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So when we analyzed the data for Alaska, we also looked at the termination rates that the actuaries determine for different categories of public employees and compared the termination rates for participants in the defined benefit plan with the termination rates for participants in the defined contribution plan. So what this chart is showing is if you had 100 male peace officers in Alaska who at age 30 were fully vested in their retirement benefit, meaning they had worked 5 years, were fully vested, looking out then over the next 25 years of their career, how many of those employees would we project to be still employed at those different ages? And what this chart shows is that of those 100 who are fully vested at age 30, at age 54, we would still expect 63 of them to be working if they were participants in the defined benefit plan, whereas we would only expect 17 of them to still be working as a peace officer in Alaska if they were participating in the defined contribution plan. So the defined benefit plan is providing 67% more service after reaching vesting than the defined contribution plan is, because the defined contribution plan is not retaining peace officers as effectively. More are leaving earlier in their career, and so the total years of service that are provided is lower in the defined contribution plan than we would expect to see in the defined benefit plan.
Okay, next slide. Got a question, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, and through the chair. To be clear, this is not a projection of data. This is an actual data set that you evaluated a group of employees and then followed them through this process?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, no, this is a projection.
Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So first I'm going to say it's fairly obvious to me why retention rates would be better under a DB because of guarantee than a DC plan. But I do want to note for the record that this comparison, the structural comparison here is a little bit off because the DB plan gives fixed incentives for retention, right? So i.e. the longer an employee works, the more salary contribution they get contributed to the tier of the DB plan. So there's no such metric in our DC plan design. So for example, if an employee works 10 years, their employer match percentage doesn't increase with their length of tenure, like their percent of salary accrued increases as they work longer into the DB plan. So my question is, how would you control for that type of big variable? Because it does end up being an apples to oranges comparison rather than an apples to apples comparison. So could you speak to that through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. So I think the way to answer your question is, if we're looking at this through the vantage point of the state as an employer or a non-state municipal employer who is wanting to maintain a stable, long-term experienced workforce, you're correct about all your the elements of the defined benefit plan that you mentioned, but those provisions are there specifically for the purpose of keeping people longer. The fact that the defined contribution plan does not have those attributes and therefore results in fewer workers being retained is also part of the design, but from the perspective of the employer, you would still expect to lose more people with the defined contribution plan. And so there's a decision to be made on the part of the employer as to how much they want to incentivize retaining employees for a career versus not offering those incentives and acknowledging that they may have more people leave earlier in their career.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Foster through the chair. No, I appreciate your answer, Mr. Bond. And basically, the factor here that we're talking about, these are plan design features, basically. So my question is, if I were to really just mirror the design in a DC plan through stair-stepping higher percentage of employer contributions tied to retainability, would you expect to see a greater or a lesser gap between the two through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. I mean, we have not modeled that. That certainly could be done as part of a plan design. A defined contribution plan could be designed in which the percentage contributed would increase over time. But that was not something that we modeled as part of this analysis.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Just for the record, I would still expect the DP plan to have a better retention than that. But my assumption is basically, like, if you were to create a plan, and I'm sure you would probably agree, you would see less of a decline because the incentive structure continues throughout the life of the DP plan, where basically after a five-year vesting period, it just kind of drops off a cliff with our current design at DC. Through the chair. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Allard.
Thank you. And through the chair. And you might have said it already, but I don't recall. Did you have a graph that shows the DB plan of the Alaska versus another state in comparison to the numbers as far as retention?
Through the chair to Representative Allard. No, we do not have a chart in this report that directly compares the retention in Alaska versus the retention in another state.
May I?
Follow up.
Okay, so is the retention, states that have a DB plan, is the retention worse in the state of Alaska that we don't have a DB plan? Maybe that would be more relevant.
Through the chair to Representative Allard. Yes, so in the other states that we have looked at, retention is higher in states that offer a defined benefit plan than it is in Alaska.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Just as a quick comment, I would say when we try to compare Alaska to another state, our living conditions and dynamic of living in Alaska is much different than almost anywhere else in the world. So I think it's hard to try to compare those you know, plans. But specifically when we were going back and looking at these models, and you were talking a little bit about this as part of the design, and we didn't really look at, as my friend Representative Stapp over there was saying, we didn't really look at the actual comparisons within the differences of retention, whether it's DC or DB. You said you did not run those models. How difficult would it be for you to actually do that analysis?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum. So with this chart, we're using the ultimate termination rates that are provided by the actuary. And so the actuary looks at the experience of the two plans and then determines the ultimate termination rates based on what they've seen as the experience of the plan. That allows us to project forward what we would estimate the future years of service would be. To the question about plan design, I mean, it would be possible to model the different potential impacts of a change in plan design in a defined contribution plan, I suppose, but that's not something that we've looked at.
Thank you. Okay, I've got Representative Schrage and then Representative Allard. Representative Schrage.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. So, to the previous point, Alaska is quite unique, but I think we can look at that comparison because we've gone through that change as a state. We've gone from a defined benefit plan to a defined contribution plan, and we are able to model, or not even model, we're able to look historically at what retention has been, and we've seen that despite all those unique aspects of Alaska, that retention has declined. Is that correct? We have the data we need to make that comparison today.
Through the chair to Representative Schrage, yes, and that is one of the reasons why we, you know, almost exclusively compared Alaska data to other Alaska data in this analysis, because the point is to see, so social scientists would call this a natural experiment, right? On one day you had a defined benefit plan, on the next day you had a defined contribution plan. We can look at changes from before and after that and compare those with each other. Those are rare, and so this is an opportunity for us to look at that specific switch, and to the representative's point, we can see how the data before the switch was different from the data after the switch, and that's the data that we're trying to convey through the charts in this report, such as the one in front of you right now.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank you for that. I think not just from our own experience here in Alaska and what history has shown, but also looking at other states, the evidence is incredibly clear that a defined benefit plan is the better option. It provides the better benefit. It provides that guarantee. That the question is not whether or not defined benefit is better than defined contribution. If you're stuck making that argument, you're stuck. The question is whether or not moving to this defined benefit is affordable for the state and whether or not it's too risky. It's just a question of risk and cost. It's not a question of whether or not defined benefit is better than defined contribution. I think all of the academic research and historical experience is that defined benefit is going to be better for the employee and is going to help the state with retention. Don't know that there's a question in there. More just a statement, but thank you.
Representative Ballard.
Thank you. And through the chair. So I kind of wanted to go back and circle with the question I asked you about where does Alaska stand? Because you said that there are states that are better, but we're only at 17.5%, so we're in the middle. So can you tell me which states, their defined benefits plan actually has a higher retention or lower retention than Alaska? Because Texas is at 28% with their retention. So how could you explain that? And, I mean, we're in the middle.
Through the chair to Representative Allard, so I have not seen the specific data you're referencing, so I would need to look at that data to fully answer your question. I would caution that there are quite a few pension plans in Texas. There are four statewide plans as well as dozens of municipal pension plans. As a researcher, I would be very reluctant to lump all of them together and try to say there's one specific turnover number for the entire state, because I think the differences among all of those plans will produce different outcomes, also depending on, again, whether it is a statewide plan or a municipal plan and the specific things that are occurring within that municipality that may also have an impact on turnover. So I would be cautious to lump numbers together in that way.
May I do a quick follow-up? Thank you. And through the chair. Then when I asked, where do we fall on the scale? Maybe I miscommunicated that to you. Then I would go back and ask you, where do we fall as far as the retention on the state of Alaska? Because you, forgive me if I misunderstood, but implied we were at the bottom, and you're a researcher, and that's just not accurate. So how do you explain your answer then if you don't know, based on my question, the actual results?
Through the chair to Representative Allard. So I did not mean at any point to imply or suggest that Alaska was at the bottom of retention. I have not looked state by state at retention in every state and for every type of defined benefit plan. So I honestly would need to look at all of that data before I could tell you where Alaska falls in that ranking. The data that I'm presenting is when we looked at Alaska-specific data and compared it to other Alaska-specific data, it is clear from that data to me that retention is lower now in Alaska than retention used to be in Alaska. But I'm not trying to compare this to any other state or give a ranking of Alaska compared to any other state.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I look at this slide and I think, you know, you got a couple of variables that you're comparing against each other. I would say that it's incomplete as far as a data set to evaluate and, you know, even making, I guess you can make a prediction on one variable, but for me to make an informed decision, I'd like to look at a little bit more than just one thing against another. I guess this slide's not telling me a lot. We have to make a decision based on, you know, where the risk is going to go. I mean, that's what I'm trying to look for. So I'm hoping that we can move on, maybe, and see what other slides you might have. Thanks.
And that leads us to slide 5.
This is not really in the interest of moving on, but this is a similar chart to the – I promise this is the last one of these charts I have in my slides. This is simply showing the exact same data comparison as in the previous slide, but now in this example it's looking at data for female teachers here in Alaska. So again, 100 female teachers fully vested in their retirement plan at age 30 – projecting out how many more years of service would we expect for those 100 female teachers. And again, as with the previous chart, that projection would predict that there would be more female teachers in Alaska retained by the defined benefit plan than there would be female teachers retained by the defined contribution plan.
Slide 6.
So this is sort of another look at similar data. So this is specific to TRS, the defined contribution plan within TRS. Again, one of the things the actuaries are required to calculate in their actuarial experience studies every time those are conducted is the termination rates, the number of workers, or in this case, the percentage of workers that they expect to leave based on years of service. So you see in the column on the left, it's years of service starting from less than one and going up to five. Then it shows broken out between men and women, the current termination rates that the actuaries use for the TRS, defined contribution plan, and then the termination rates that they proposed, which were adopted following this actuarial experience study. And it shows that they are expecting that in the future, more people will terminate with fewer years of service than in the than with the termination rates they were using at the time. So they expect more people will leave earlier going forward than the current numbers that they were using. And so this is simply another data point suggesting that the actuaries, based on the data they are looking at, expect retention to get worse in the future.
Question, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just can't, unless I see the variables that are being used to make these kind of predictions, I'm having a hard time seeing where you know, how you get from column, your first set to your second set, because I don't know what kind of variables or what they're using to make those predictions. And maybe that data set's out there. Maybe that's, if I followed the link, that's where it would be. But, and maybe it's in here somewhere, and if you would tell me what's that, that'd be good.
Through the chair to Representative Johnson. So the link provided in the slides does lead to the actuarial experience study where this chart was taken from. So the actuaries do explain sort of how they get from A to B in the experience study. And they, what they are doing is they are looking at the actual experience of the plan. So what they do, so in Alaska, they do four-year experience studies. So they, in 2022, they looked back over the previous four fiscal years. So the fiscal year, well, for the purposes of the retirement plan, the year that began July 1st of 2017 through the ending on June 30th of 2021. So they looked at what was the actual experience of the plans during that four-year period, and then based on the data that they saw during the four-year, during that four-year period, then they compare that data and they say, okay, we now expect X, Y, and Z will be different than what we were predicting before. And to be clear, things can be better or worse. The actuaries are just looking at the experience and saying, this is different, this is different, this is different. It happens to be the case that in the TRS defined contribution plan, what they are seeing in the data tells them that they expect going forward that retention will be worse because more people will leave earlier in their careers than they had seen in the previous years of data.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that. I mean, I know you can't go into all the background, but I mean, we all know there's a societal shift and people tend to, we're not sticking with our 30-year careers in the same way. There's a lot of different variables, so it's hard for me to just jump right into this. And I hear what you're saying, that they're taking basically the empirical evidence and creating a model from it. But I think to go any further and you know, say why, I think it's hard to say exactly why from here. Anyway. Thank you.
Co-chair, if I may make a comment in response to the representative's statement. I mean, I would encourage you to ask the actuaries to come here and talk to you. I talk to a lot of actuaries in my job. They're usually very happy to talk about their work and their analysis and how they arrive at the numbers that they do. So if I would suggest further sources of information besides the research that I can provide you with, I think the actuaries would be able to answer a lot of the specific questions that have been raised by the members of the committee today.
Okay. In the lineup, I've got Representative Stapp and then Shragi. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. It's probably your worst slide. I like most of your presentation. Really is because what are we exactly looking at? So none of these people have a invested in any other type of benefit, right? So basically you're telling me you expect 50% increase in people who hate their job so much they quit within 1 year of working if they're female. I mean, to me that's like it's probably more regarding their boss than it is their benefit, right? So you're going to tell me that because they think this retirement plan's so bad that 31% of them are quit less than 1 year in their job. Like, how on earth do we assume that at all? Actuarial rate regarding, I mean, that's literally less than 1 year on the job and they aren't retained, and that's because their retirement plan, through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. So yes, I mean, you're completely correct. These are people who are not vested in their benefit because even in the bottom row, that's only 5 years of service, which is the point at which you're 100% vested. And it is the case when we look at other defined benefit plans, turnover is always higher in the first 5 years of service. There is always more churn in the first 5 years of service because people are figuring out if this is the job that they want to do. And some of them within a year or two or three will decide, no, this is not the job I want to do, and we'll leave. So that is all completely valid. I think what I would suggest here, again, I do not think the pension is likely the sole factor contributing to this. There is very likely to be other factors contributing to this. But when we look at similar termination rates in other pension plans, we don't see numbers like this. We don't see 31% leaving within less than a year. We don't see 21% leaving after 1 year, which does suggest that at least a portion of that is that the absence of the defined benefit plan is not providing an incentive for folks to stay in order to earn that benefit once they're fully vested.
At fault, Ms. Kutcher.
Hold up.
Thank you, Ms. Kutcher. Yeah, but if they're quitting in 1 year, they're not getting the pension either, right? So how could that be a reason? Like, I get it if they're going to quit after 5 years. So if, to me, if they hate their job, they want to quit after 5 years, they get to take their fully vested benefit. But how on earth are we making a conclusion of somebody who literally signs up for a job, 3 weeks into it, they quit, they wouldn't get their pension or they wouldn't get their DC because both those things are going to be forfeit, and that I'm supposed to infer anything from that chart.
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. I mean, yes, you are correct that someone who quits in less than a year would not receive either the employer contributions to their defined contribution plan or a pension benefit because they would not have vested in it at that time. Again, the question is, to what extent does the presence or absence of a pension act as a signal to a new, in this case, teacher that, you know, if they stay, if they decide to stay on the job, they will have the opportunity to earn this benefit in the future? Or does that absence say, you know, you may not like this job and you're not going to be able to earn a pension doing it?
Okay.
Got in the queue, Representative Shragi, and then Representative Vallard. Representative Shragi.
Yeah, just really quickly through the chair, thank you. One, to the prior question, I can imagine an employee considering quitting and talking to their supervisor, and their supervisor says, you know, stick it out a little longer, give this a try for a few more years, at least vest in the plan. But that's not the reason I jumped in the queue. I keep hearing this talking point that the younger generation isn't interested in pensions anymore. I like to think that I'm still part of the younger generation in my low 30s, very interested in a pension. And it's not just me. I talk to my colleagues and my friends in the community, and this is something that they're aware of. I go to Costco, and it shocks me. I have people in line at Costco working for DOT or DNR, and they're saying, pensions, go, yeah, keep fighting for pensions. They care about this stuff. And then you look at employer surveys or employee surveys, and troopers, fire, teachers, over and over, regardless of what industry that they're in, they're saying one of the things that we want to see to help address recruitment and retention and improve our workforce is we want to see a pension. We want to see improved retirement options. So, you know, to the extent that this argument keeps coming up that young folk like me aren't interested in pensions, my anecdotal experience is that is wrong. Now, maybe folks have some data they'd like to bring to the committee that shows that people really don't care about pensions anymore, but my personal experience, all the data I've seen says, look, people really do care about pensions still, and that is something that's a consideration for people. So I had to chime in on that because I've heard it over the past few months, and it drives me nuts. Thank you. Not a question again.
Okay. In the queue, I've got Representative Ellard and then Johnson. Representative Ellard.
Thank you, and through the chair. I just want to emphasize that we do need to get an actuarial analysis. The sooner the better, and I think we could request that through the state. And then, you know, with what we're hearing and saying about the defined benefits, I mean, California, their people have left in droves, and it's concerning on how we fix this retirement plan. And then with the representative from Anchorage who just spoke, I would say that as a mom of Generation Z, they're not really hot on the defined benefits or retirement. That's not where their mindset is. And I think because they move around so much and their happiness is found somewhere else, I mean, that's a whole nother issue, that I'm hearing the opposite. They have a life to live, and they want to be able to move and come and go as they want. But if you lock them in, I believe it could be something that you're locking people in that don't want to be there. I would never want to force someone in a job and then have them be miserable. So just like him, I think it was more of a comment. Thank you.
And maybe if I could, while we're on the subject of actuaries and just needing to get spooled up and educated on them and as to when it's coming, Representative Kopp, I have what I understand to be the estimated date as to when that's coming, but maybe I'll give you the opportunity to put yourself on the record and maybe let us know what the most updated is on the actuary, possible actuaries.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the House Finance Committee, my name is Chuck Kopp, representative of House District 10. So yes, Mr. Chairman, your illustrious staff have requested the state's actuary to produce that for this committee. I believe that it's roughly a few weeks out. I think Mr. Brody could confirm if I'm correct, but that formal request has been made from this committee is my understanding. Also, the committee has the resource of Chiron, a second actuary, which I believe this committee is contracting with, that could also produce that. And I do encourage, I agree with Representative Ballard, hearing from the actuary is very important because it is actually the actuary's job to look at actual retention experience going backwards. That's how they project experience going forwards. And that's how they come up with an assumed return rate, which keeps us out of trouble, and their actuary license depends on them doing that. So it is good to hear from them, and they're literally doing a retention study every single year for the state.
Great. Thank you very much for that. Got a lot of questions now. we've got Representative Johnson, Representative Stapp, Representative Bynum. Did I miss anyone? Okay, Representative and Josephson. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I hate to break it to my esteemed colleague at the top of the table, but, he's a little older than we all get a little older, and we forget about that sometimes. I'm thinking of my children and my children's age group in their early 20s and then their 20s, and there is some. I think there's a lot of thought out there. The state of Alaska has a good retirement system, and they're. When they look at the state employees, and they're not state workers, and they already see the defined contribution plan, they think that the state workers are doing pretty well. Maybe that's not what people think when they're in the system, but people outside of the system I think our younger people do actually think about getting a state job because they like what there is that they're seeing that's there already. And that's not a statement on whether we should or should not do more, but that's my observation of what's happening and what I've heard from people. What I would like to say is, you know, we need to talk about, well, I'm thinking we need to talk about, do we want to try to do the golden handcuffs? I mean, that's what we talk about a lot in Alaska because Alaska is an unusual place. If we're talking about increasing our, doing something with our retirement so we can keep people here and force them to stay here, well, then maybe that's a valid reason. Maybe we can't keep people in Alaska because, you know, people want to leave. There are things like, I mean, I guess I'm hearing a lot of different arguments, but the ones that I am hearing don't necessarily strike me as what I guess is going to make a big difference in changing my mind as far as the risk that we have, our responsibility as legislators to the state of Alaska. I mean, we have a responsibility not to put ourselves out over, you know, overextend the state in a way that may cause us not to just have the unfunded liability that we do, but to add to it. So, I mean, I'm looking at our risk that we may take on, and I'm also looking to see, you know, do we need to do something to keep people here? Because I guess if people don't want to stay in Alaska, do we need to do something about that? Those are the variables that I'm looking at more than, you know, what's happening with retention and so on. Anyway, I appreciate the data that you're providing, although it's not what's probably going to make the big difference for changing my mind, I suppose.
Mr. Chairman, may I just respond? I don't want to take away from the presenter's presentation. I feel like I just need to get out of the way now. But just real briefly, Representative DeLand Johnson talked about risk, responsibility, and the employer. And I really agree with her that all those three of those things are very important. And I want to emphasize that we ask our employees, whether they be teachers in rural Alaska or our public safety employees, our teachers are basically, we're exchanging the life of our children, trusting that that classroom is going to be safe and that teacher is going to be the living curriculum in front of that child. And we're betting a lot on that. So we've already made a huge commitment with those teachers, and we've said we're willing to risk, including putting our child in your classroom. And risks between employers and employees are shared. In this case, all we're talking about a shared risk for the sake of peace officers. They're putting their life on the line every day. And you go by the law enforcement or the firefighters memorial and you see all those names on there. And I hope you show up to that memorial and touch those names. There's hundreds of them on there. And that is a risk that they take. And I believe you do, Representative Johnson. But I'm saying that's a risk that they take. So if we say as a state that we're not willing to take a risk, we need to be careful about that because they're putting everything on the line for us. So risk is shared. And finally, the responsibility of the plan is critical. And the responsibility is one that we're talking about and all these levers that make sure we're not going unfunded. So I want to just confirm I'm with you on those things, but I want to say the risk is shared and it's something that we have to be sensitive to and not say that if there's any risk, I won't support it. Because any plan that we have for retirement or for operating services involves a shared risk.
May I have to respond to that. I have been at that memorial as mayor for the city of Palmer. I take every life and every member of our police and fire very seriously.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. And I've seen you there. Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. And let's see here. I do have a lineup, which I'm going to go through in a moment. But I also want to say at 3:15, we're losing a number of folks due to bill hearings. This has actually been a very substantive and very fruitful discussion. I want to make sure that we're all kind of on the same page, and so I don't want to continue the meeting after we lose half the committee. So what I'd like to do is maybe adjourn. Instead of 3:30, we'll adjourn at 3:15, and then Mr. Clauda, if we need to, Bond, if we need to bring you back, I don't know if you're here or if we have to get you on the phone, but we'll figure something out. But
We do have a ways to go. We're only about a third of the way through the presentation. I just don't want to rush, and I don't want to continue on when folks are going to be missing. So with that, let me know if I've missed anybody in the queue here. I've got Representative Stapp, Bynum, Josephson, Galvin, and Allard. Did I miss anyone? I don't think so. Okay, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So thanks to Representative Kopp for giving us that update. I'll take my questions regarding the actuary offline to him to save some time here. But I do want to point out for the committee, Mr. Bond here has actually done some really good studies, and I think this presentation is fine. I'm going to give you a hard time, especially over this slide, but I really want to talk about, you did a study that you'll hand out to the committee with a person called Enduring Challenges, examining the experience of states that closed pensions. And there's a lot of information in that study that I think is really pertinent to this discussion. And if I could have the chair indulge me for a couple of minutes, could you just talk about kind of this overall state of the retirement system after we close it, because it's really important when we look at assessing the risk going forward. So my first question to you through the chair is, can you tell me the difference between actuarially determined employer contributions and annual required contributions to a plan through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. So those are basically two different terms that refer to the same thing. The actuarial community, for some reason, keeps slightly changing the terminology, but they basically refer to the same number.
Yeah, follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow up.
So the reason I bring that up is because in your study, when you looked at Alaska specifically, since Alaska left the defined benefit program, we have made over $7 billion in additional contributions to try to bring the plan funded. And in your analysis, we actually underfunded the contributions in, I think you said, 10 out of 14 years. And can you speak to that through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. Yes. So we looked at what the actuaries would have recommended as the full 100% actuarial contribution in a given year, and then looked at whether or not that total amount was contributed in that year. And in the 14 years of data that we looked at, to which you refer, we did find that in 10 of those years, the number was lower than the 100% that would have been recommended by the actuaries.
And a follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow-up.
So just out of curiosity, given the fact that we did put such an additional state contribution in this pot here, what should we have actually been putting in if we were to have listened to the actual required contribution through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. So I don't have that specific number in front of me. I could look at it and provide it to you as a follow-up.
Okay. Thank you. And another follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow-up.
So the reason I bring that up is because $7 billion for an actuarial, basically risk ratio mistake is a big mistake. And just so people are aware, we didn't even contribute as much money as they said we should over and beyond what we take. We took for our employees to fill the plan. So the last thing I was hoping you could address is you talk about the dwindling enrollment in the defined benefits plan and the financial stress of the capital outflows from that plan and the assets, and you talk about employee ratios being enrollment in the plan. You can just tell us why those are important through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. Yes. So typically when a defined benefit plan is open and has new members joining every year, it has members retiring every year, the way that the plan invests, it can invest on an ongoing basis. So it can take a certain amount of risks with its investments. It can balance an appropriate ratio between risks and safety with its investment so that it continues to earn what it needs in order to pay benefits. When a plan is closed and has no new participants joining the plan, the number of contributions into the plan decreases through the lack of active members. That forces the plan to change the way it invests. It has to invest more conservatively because it doesn't have as many new contributions coming into the plan to allow it to maintain that sort of ongoing balance of risk and safe assets. And so as the plan becomes more conservative in its investments, the number of the amount of investment returns generated would be expected to be lower.
Follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair?
Follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I'll give the committee this study that this produced at the center as well. But can you speak to the ratio of what you would consider healthy of active working employees in a DB plan and retired working employees in the plan, through the chair?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. So I don't have a specific number that I would recommend, but I think this is in a separate report than the one you're citing, but we do, and I can follow up with you and provide this chart. We do have a chart where we look at the ratio of retirees in both TRS and PERS here in Alaska compared to the universe of public pension plans in the U.S. And TRS and PERS are close to 4-to-1, and the ratio across all public plans is 0.8-to-1. So the demographic ratio is significantly more mature, is how the actuaries would refer to it, in the two closed plans here in Alaska.
Yeah, and I follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Follow up.
And just so you could humor me this last time, that's important to tell the committee because it affects rates of return, it affects cash balance in the plan, and when you look at those types of outflows. Because the biggest fear that we have, that I have when talking about this, though unlike the Co-Chair Schrage, I've never heard anyone tell me at Costco they wanted pensions. I know a lot of people who tell me they do want a pension, just never heard it at Costco. But to me, this is just about the numbers and assessing the risk. And one of my approaches to this process is kind of to come at it with an understanding that the reason that we're here is because many public employees feel that Tier 4 is inadequate to meet some of their retirement needs, especially those who did not enroll in our supplemental benefit system. So it's an important conversation to have. But this is the type of decision, because of our state's constitution, that we have to get right because we can only walk through the door one time. And so if you could get that to the committee and maybe give us a explanation why that's so important for the capitalization of the plan, I'd really appreciate that. Thank you.
If I may, Co-Chair, to the Representative Stapp. So one impact which you sort of alluded to with the plan being closed is that negative cash flows are higher in the plan. Basically, all mature pension plans have negative cash flows, but those tend to be stable. But in a closed plan, negative cash flows tend to increase over time because a higher percentage of the assets of the plan are paid out in benefits. And so as those negative cash flows increase, and the percentage of assets is paid out as benefits increases, to Representative Stapp's point, that does have an impact on the plan's investments.
Representative Stapp?
Yeah, thank you. I'll give it up after this, I promise, Co-Chair. So just to follow up, what are we – to simplify that, basically saying there's more Peters we need to rob fund to pay Paul in the event that happens. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp. I don't think I would put it in quite that way, but generally the more participants in a plan, the more ongoing contributions in the plan, the plan has more options for managing the contributions, the investments, spreading the risk across a wider pool of plan participants.
Okay, thank you. With that, we're going to go ahead and adjourn. I know some folks have some bill hearings. I will keep notes of the queue, so when we do come back to Mr. Bond, in the queue I do have Representative Bynum, Josephson, and Galvin. So with that, we are going to hear tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. From the Permanent Fund Corporation, and this is a ongoing series, including or part of our overviews for the FY26 operating budget. So with that, thank you very much, everyone. Very fruitful and substantive discussion. Will be adjourned at 3:17 p.m. Thank you.